You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hi, One of Us fans. This is Matt from the Nighthawks Podcast.
And I'm Trevor of the Nighthawks Podcast.
You may remember our ASMR appropriate butterscotch baritone voices from several episodes of Screener Squad.
And we're here to tell you about the Nighthawks Podcast, where you can also find us getting even more granular with the movies.
You say it's called the Nighthawks Podcast?
The Nighthawks Podcast.
The very same Nighthawks Podcast that covers new movies, old movies, mainstream blockbusters, and cult classics from days gone by?
The Nighthawks Podcast. That's available on Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, and other fine podcatchers.
The Nighthawks Podcast is also available at nighthawkspodcast.com. You like how we keep saying Nighthawks Podcast?
Nighthawks Podcast.
Guys, heard of video nasties? Do you know what that is?
Oh yeah,
well versed.
Well, look who I'm talking to here. Are you kidding? I own all of them.
Video nasty, surprisingly, not strictly pornographic.
Generally speaking, not at all. It refers to horror. It was a thing in the 80s in England, specifically, when the Thatcher administration was losing its goddamn mind and there was violence everywhere and xenophobia, and it was getting bad. They decided, as right-wing politicians are want to do, or any politicians really, to point the finger somewhere else. Look, it must be that. Like, I remember in America, it was briefly Dungeons and Dragons and heavy metal music that were like, yeah, that's why the kids are bad.
Beavis and Butthead.
Like, it's always something, but it was a much bigger and longer lasting, like a decade long thing in England, the video nasty. Like, the fault is these terrible horror movies like Evil Dead and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but more commonly stuff that was from Italy a lot of the time and other countries. There was a lot of Italian films like Cannibal Holocaust and anything by Argento that they were going, and now is looked at, okay, that's kind of xenophobic, right? But either way, this lasted for a while, and it went to the point where Britain established a censorship board that could make very harsh cuts in these films, some of which of these films are only starting to trickle out now, released editions of them in England, where were the ones the rest of us got to see. They would get these severely cut films, and anybody that was caught selling uncut versions of these films, or if the producers were sent releasing them on any level, uncut versions in England, they could be prosecuted even with jail time under obscenity laws there. It was kind of a big deal. And this is the period of time that this new horror film Censor takes place in, following a character named Enid, played by Niam Algar. You've probably seen her. She was in Raised by Wolves. She was in Wrath of Man. She plays a sort of conservative, hair tied back, prim glasses censor. She works for this company doing it. It's kind of a banal workaday job, right? Everyone's there like, it's just, you know, you do what you do. You just cut this, you go to work, you cut some movies, you go back out of work. There's talk of like, how do you stay so numb to all this? It's so disturbing. She's like, I don't know. But apparently the press gets a hold of the fact that she was the censor on a film that the press is attaching to a real life serial killer called the Amnesia Killer, because he claims not remembering any of the murders, and attach it to this film that she released, and specifically a scene that happened in it that appears to have been recreated by this killer. So they're like, oh, it's your fault. Her life is starting to get more complicated there. Meanwhile, we see that her sister, Nina, went missing when she was only a little girl, and nobody really knows what happened. She can't remember what actually happened to her. She has little flashes, but it's very unclear, and she's been kind of obsessed by this whole time. The parents wanted to finally sign to go, look, here is a certificate of death. We are, in fact, giving up, but she doesn't want to. All this stuff and the press attention and everything going on culminates in everything becoming heightened with her when she gets a new film called Don't Go in the Church by this made-up director, Frederick north. And the film reminds her, starts flashing hard for her about memories of what happened with her sister. And she starts to become obsessed that this actress who works for this guy might actually be her sister. Thus starts a downward spiral into madness, question mark? This is Censor, brand new British horror film from director Prano Bailey Bond, who apparently was one of those one-to-watch directors after her short Nasty made the rounds of festivals and won a ton of awards. This is her debut feature film, and talking about it with me here is Marco.
Hello, everybody.
Right.
Hello, everybody.
And Adrian.
Hello, hello.
So this is definitely a film that is look is influenced by the video nasties, of which we not only see straight up footage from a lot of the video nasties and some of the goriest sequences from them, but there's a lot of actual flat out gore happening in this film as well, especially in the third act, all of which is definitely modeled over that style where it's very bloody and gory, but kind of cheap looking at the same time. As well, the lighting look and the colors reflect, no question, the giallo films that were coming out in this period.
This is Bava and Argento lighting all the way.
And I'm not sure if this is intentional or not. You know, I love Italian horror, so I always want to see it in whatever I'm watching. But I swear her outfit and her look is very similar to Daria Nicoldi, the star of most Argento films. So if you've ever seen a woman in an Argento film, it's probably her, and she's dressed a lot like her.
Also Argento's wife for a long time, and reportedly the actual writer of Suspiria.
Oh.
Yeah, but I love the way they dress Enid in this. The lead actress is really compelling. Obviously a very beautiful woman, but they make her look as dowdy as possible. This is the Thatcher era. She's very conservative, buttoned up, hair in a bun, big glasses with the granny chain. She really seems like a very prim and proper woman. And yet, her job is to watch these horrible, terrible things all day long and analyze them. And it really is an interesting argument. They're like, these things will make you depraved. I'm like, yeah, unless the censors cut them. But what happens to the censors who have to watch these every day?
I think the biggest question here with this film and the biggest point where I came short of really enjoying this as much as I might have is that the film never really has any idea how it feels about the question of how dangerous is it to people to watch horror movies in the first place. Because it is no question addressing by its very concept, there people do have a negative effect from this, but it's also saying, yes, but the press blew this out of proportion. There's a coda in this film towards the end, a hallucinatory coda that seems to be all saying very firmly, like, no, this dream that England will be perfect and wonderful if we just could get rid of the horror films is clearly absurd. But it doesn't match with the first half of the film for me. And I found it kind of wishy-washy in that sense.
I don't think it's trying to make an argument one way or the other. I think that is its weakness. It acknowledges those arguments. It acknowledges all of the stock arguments about why these things should or should not be cut. But that's really not what the movie's about. It's really a springboard for a psychological thriller about an emotionally distressed woman who just happens to be in the perfect job to trigger her horrible past and set her off on a disturbing journey.
I thought it was a great character study about her. And yeah, to your point, Marco, just the wrong place at the wrong time kind of thing for to trigger all these bad memories. And then for her to have this downward spiral of like clues, even in the films that she's watching, about maybe there is something there that she can take to lead her down maybe the answers of like what actually happened to her sister. I personally really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun, and it took its time a lot more than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be more bombastic than anything else, but it really took its time to like develop her. And the film is beautifully shot, I thought. There's like great sequences that I was just kind of enamored with where she's walking down a hallway, but it's just like her like walking around in a circle, seemingly the way that it was portrayed. It was starting to feel like we're kind of basically going insane with her in a way.
When we got the trailer for this one, I was excited right away because, well, this has to do with the video nasties era. Mm-hmm. They're kind of referencing these movies, and it's also a mystery. Like, I love mystery films. I love mystery films that are involved in the film world, like something like Hardcore, the Paul Schrader film, or even to a more extreme 8mm that's just like kind of ridiculous, but also kind of fits in that let's delve into this film world to get to the bottom of this mystery. And I was really liking when this movie was that film, and then there was a certain point where I don't know what this movie turned into. And it just kind of ended up being one of those where it's like, I think I'm a little too dumb to understand this. Either that, or this definitely is for two-time viewings, and I only got to see it one time. I've been dreading talking about it.
Oh, that's too bad, because I enjoyed it too. I don't think it succeeded at everything it's trying to do, and I think part of that is misleading. Because of that trailer, you think you know what you're getting. But this is kind of a more of a meta movie. And, you know, pay very close attention to the aspect ratios, because once those start to change, yeah, it gives away the game. But they're very key.
I was going to say, like, as much as this movie treads on tricks that films in the 80s use, one of the newer tricks it uses is compressing its aspect ratio, sometimes very subtly at first. It took me a little bit before I even noticed it.
Yeah.
But it continues to slowly shrink and get smaller and smaller on screen as it gets tenser and things get crazier and more out of control. I was like, that's a newer trick. I was like, yeah, it was supposed to look more like watching one of those on your set-top box, ultimately, where you compress to a square. But I was very impressed what they did with that. I know what you're saying, Adrian. I think that the problem is ultimately that they set it up as a mystery, and the mystery is just a MacGuffin. It's not really what this film is about at all. It's just a ways, means for the character to get where they need her to be at the end. And that's frustrating when you spend a lot of the movie dropping clues. Oh, is this important? Oh, does this mean anything? Only to be like, I mean, no. But as you said, right, I think it was, this is a character piece. And yeah, I think that's kind of the point. If you look at it as a character piece and not as a mystery, I think it's less bothersome. But I wanted something more there. And there were questions I had towards the end where I was like, but how could you possibly, moments?
I totally understand. I kind of got halfway through trying to think about what the resolution was going to be. Like, where is this really going to land? It landed where I really wanted it to. I'm actually really satisfied the way that it did, because it lit itself again. I was like, no, this is really about her rather than what the mystery is all about, like you're saying, and like what the true resolution and like the, what is the real answer. But you do get a real answer, and it's a very bittersweet and unfortunate answer that's really directed again towards just the protagonist rather than a more tangential kind of answer.
The final scenes in this are filmed through someone's madness and their vision, yeah, of what's happening, with flashes of what's actually happening going on.
Oh my God,
on.
I loved it.
Just bone chilling, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
But that's where the censor comes in. I mean, the idea of the censor, the era of the video nasties, has us primed to have this conversation about whether or not media has this effect on people, that it makes them, you know, go crazy or triggers some sadistic desire to murder people. Really, the censor is more in the sense that the human mind can edit out things it doesn't want to think about. And I think that's a very big key, both to this amnesiac killer and to the fact that Enid obviously had some trauma. Even before she became a censor as a child, she has censored it out. She's managed to just purge her mind. Now it's coming back. It's triggered by this movie that somehow bears a striking resemblance to a suppressed memory that's suddenly unlocked. She just really goes off the rails. This isn't a movie about whether or not horror movies make people do bad things. This is much closer to the John Hinckley Jr.'s or the Mark David Chapman's or even the Manson family, who's convinced the Beatles are telling them to do horrible things. If you think about it, more people have committed murder based on other sources of media than they ever did for horror. But horror was always an easy scapegoat. The media was just a fuel for somebody who already is prone to have delusions.
Go into your final thoughts.
I think I like this a little bit more than you did, Chris. I don't think I liked it as much as Wright did. I do wish that it had focused a little bit more on what those themes were. We did get a bit of a bait and switch, which we thought we were going to get some fascinating mystery, but it really is the depiction of a young person's mind who has just gone off the rails and over many years of suppressed memories and trauma has finally had all of that unlocked by a horrible movie that she's seen. She would have done something terrible with or without this movie. I'm sorry. I do wish it had been better, but I was still quite pleased. I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 video cassettes.
Adrian.
Pretty much what Marco said. I'm going to give this a solid. No. No, I'm kidding. I was liking this movie up to a point. When it became clear this wasn't just going to be a mystery film, I was still fine with that. And I was trying to pick up the clues like, oh, you know what? I think it's really going to be this type of film. And then the ending of the film broke that as well and made me realize like, okay, maybe I really don't know what this was going for. there's subtext there. There's obviously a message about the whole censorship issue. Is this good or bad? And yes, this does have to do with her psyche. Like right after this, I watched Saint Maud, and I feel like Saint Maud was a little more obvious about what's going down. I was liking what it was doing. I was liking the homages to the films that it's talking about. But when it comes to where it's going, I just thought, like, I guess that's fine. I guess this is worth the payoff, but it also left me feeling a little, I guess, wanting more. Because of that, I'm going to give this 3 Have We Got a Video out of 5.
Right.
I think this is a fantastic first feature film by Aprano Bailey Bond. I am really excited to see what she does next. Visually, how she shot this, and I really dig the story that she told. It was, like we were all saying, it was like kind of this sort of bait and switch about what we thought was going to be a mystery, but it really ended up being more about this person just kind of slowly losing her mind over the trauma that she experienced as a child. And just the setting that it takes place in, I thought it was ample opportunity to think about, like, what did it mean towards, like, society at the time? How does it actually affect people? And does it at all? I thought it was just like really a fun world to kind of be in. It did definitely remind you of what Adrian was talking about, like hardcore and 8mm. I was getting 8mm vibes the entire time until I was like, quite honestly, I like this a lot more than 8mm and definitely hardcore. And I also love her. I love Nayam Alger. I remember seeing her in Raised by Wolves with you, Chris. And man, she is really great. I really love her as an actress. And I'm just looking forward to what she does next. And the third act and what ends up happening was like, man, this is so tense. And what we were talking about with the aspect ratios, that stuff is super film geeky, but it was really effective with me. And like you were saying, Chris, it was like slowly realizing what was happening. I was like, okay, I'm in this. I kind of love how, again, it feels like a first feature film, and I just thought she really pulled it off. So I want to give it, honestly, 9 out of 10 trophies through an orifice, maybe a back of the head.
Man, some of those film producers, they just can't keep trophies from coming out of their mouth. And they're just constantly, anywhere they go, they're just like, did I tell you I won this award?
They just can't keep anything out of their mouths, really. Oh. Out of their mouths or up their nose. That's a producer for you.
Everything about this film on the whole, I really enjoyed. I think the setting is terrific and interesting. We don't get a lot of movies set in this political climate specifically. The performances are all top notch here. And some of them, like from actors that you don't expect to see in a film like this, who come in and do slightly goofy roles. I believe it's Nicholas Burns, who's best known for being on like the It Crowd, and the Mighty Boosh plays a role in here. Its biggest problem for me ultimately wasn't even that I didn't feel like it completely had a handle on what it wanted to say, which doesn't matter as much. Its biggest problem is that it kind of drags for a lot of the first act. The first act is very slow and not much is happening. It's all setting, and I feel like it kind of goes over it a bit much, whereas nothing really starts happening till the third act in this film that's a horror film. And that's super intense and cool and impressive and does really neat stuff you haven't seen before, or harkens back to stuff we haven't seen in a really long time in a way that leaves you thinking. I felt like they could have gotten into that a lot sooner than they actually did, because this takes a long time to finally get around to where it's going. And I'll be honest, there's a point I'm just like, I'm at like a 5 with this movie. As impressively made as it is in many ways, technically, it's not very interesting. So when it finally got to like, oh, now it's going to do it, I'm like, okay, this is cool. Just maybe a little faster next time. I don't know. I mean, I swear I don't have ADHD that I'm aware of, but it felt like it watching this movie. I still really liked it, and I agree. Whatever this director does next is definitely going to be worth seeking out. This is an impressive debut, and I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 horror films that probably didn't inspire murders, but the Rambo films certainly did. Like, no one ever points at the Rambo movies and goes, look, see? And how many people were like, yeah, like fucking bought a gun because it was an arrow thing because it was just like Rambo and I wanted to be like Rambo or Dirty Harry? We don't even talk about that because then the NRA is like, shut up.
Nobody ever invaded a foreign country because they saw Evil Dead Part 2.
Exactly.